Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
As we keep hearing good news about a coronavirus vaccine, much of the painful story of this pandemic remains to be written. Today, biomedical educator Dr. Amber Bueller returns to the Coin Podcast Network to share her thoughts on vaccine development and distribution, and why the road ahead is still fraught with danger. I'm Ian Costello. It is Thursday, December 3rd, and you are listening to the Coin Podcast Network coverage of the coronavirus pandemic. As always, Amber, thank you for spending some time with me today. It's good to catch up with you. As I've said several times, I really enjoy our conversations and they're very informative to me. Obviously, our recent news when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic isn't good. Cases and hospitalizations continue to spike, but I'd like to start here if we can. Is the news we are hearing over the last week, week and a half or so, in regards to a vaccine, a bit of a light at the end of a very dark tunnel?
It is. It's definitely a light. Unfortunately, the tunnel is still very long. So we are going to have a vaccine that begins to be sent out to the public in December. However, that's a very small number of doses in the scheme of things. So what we have to do is health organizations are having to prioritize different groups. And so, of course, they're going first to release it to people who are healthcare workers and who are in extremely high risk, such as people in nursing homes and assisted living. And then they're going to kind of go down step by step with different risk groups. The next step would be the elderly who aren't necessarily at really high risk. Then it'll be people who are in high touch environments, say people that work in grocery stores, school teachers, young kids who you can't really keep from touching each other when they're at school. And then at the very bottom end of that are going to be people like presumably you and me, reasonably healthy adults, and have the lowest risk factor and the lowest risk of exposing themselves. So when they talk about having the vaccine out in December, that's for our healthcare workers. It's going to be January or February until that mid-range risk factor people get vaccinated. It could be April, May, June before you and I get vaccinated. So it's still a very long tunnel.
Before we really dive in depth into talking about the vaccine, we shouldn't really be holding our breath. Just because we've got some positive things to talk about when it comes to vaccines, it really doesn't give us the green light to forget everything we've learned so far, right? Everybody needs to continue to do the things like social distancing and wearing masks.
Absolutely. And because we're not going to have a huge population in the U.S. vaccinated until mid or late summer, we still have to be taking all of the precautions right now. And right now, that really precipitous rise of infection rates is really terrifying. One of the things that they talk about in terms of the hospitals being at capacity, that's happening in multiple states that have never had that scenario before. And when they talk about at capacity, sometimes people are confusing that with how many beds the hospital has. But right now, hospitals are reporting that they may have beds for a certain number of people, but they only have doctors and nurses and staff for a smaller number of people. So right now, the limiting factor in our being safe is how well we take care of our healthcare workers. Because if we lose them at the rate we have been, then there's no one left to take care of us.
Amber, we've heard that both Pfizer and Moderna have developed vaccines in trials that are somewhere between 90 and 95% effective. Can you break down what that effectiveness actually means?
Yeah. So 90, 95% effective is actually really good. And I'm going to call it efficacy because we're really talking about how well it's going to work in the general population, not how well it works for an individual person. We're really talking about how many fewer people are going to get the virus or get sick from the virus if they have the vaccine out there. Right now, when they say it is 90 or 95% effective, what that really means is that it reduces the number of people who get sick by 90-95%. So if you have a very high number of people who are getting sick in your community, then a 95% drop is still a good drop, but you'd still have a lot of people getting sick. Whereas if you have a low number of people getting sick in your community, then a 95% drop of that low number gets you really close to nothing. That's one of the big reasons people are going to still have to use social distancing and masks, even in the first stages when the vaccine comes out, is to keep those baseline numbers low so that the vaccine can really cut that down to almost nothing.
Efficacy in trials is a long way from distribution.
Yes. Right now, we do have those two that are going to the FDA for emergency use authorization, and that's the Pfizer, BioNTech, and the Moderna vaccines. The AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine is still a little further behind, and the news that came out for that is still really preliminary. And I want to really hit that point home because preliminary data or data that is released by a company in a press release is data that hasn't really been looked at by the scientific community yet. And so we came into that problem with the whole hydroxychloroquine issue. Then remdesivir didn't turn out as promising as we first thought it would. And what happens is scientists have to bounce ideas around. They have to get some data, look at it, and then go get more. And when a company sends out a press release with the first data they get, that may or may not be any good. And so it's really important for news to be able to distinguish between data that is still preliminary, means really don't trust it yet, and data that's actually been vetted by the scientific and medical community. And it's important to know that emergency use authorization is not the same as FDA approval. So it's going to still take months to get FDA approval, because to get full approval, it requires more safety data, a longer follow-up, and more people to be looked at. The emergency use authorization is really a method of getting it out there in desperate times before you have all the data you really want. So they're only going to be able to make that available for people who are super high risk. So the emergency use authorization is really going to go for those healthcare workers. For it to go to the rest of the population, we're going to have to see that FDA approval.
With this emergency use authorization, these groups that could be getting it soon, when is soon? When are we talking about them actually getting the vaccination?
Soon is very soon. So December 10th is when the FDA is going to meet for the first emergency use authorization meetings. And Pfizer has said that they're actually going to be able to start bottling and get out the door those vaccines within a few days. So really what the companies have done is they've already ramped up in anticipation. So by mid-December, assuming that authorization is granted, which we're pretty much assuming is going to happen, then those first doses to those high-risk people, high-priority population, is going to be out there December 15th. And those people are going to be able to start getting vaccinated very soon.
When you speak of doses and the number of people that could be vaccinated, how many doses are we talking about? And we know that that's a different number than how many people are actually going to get vaccinated. Can you give me the numbers and a bit of an understanding of why they're different?
So right now, the vaccines that we're looking at require two vaccinations. One, and then a month later, 3 to 4 weeks later, a second vaccination, or what we call a booster shot. So for every person to be fully vaccinated, we need two doses. We don't really have a lot of doses that are going to be available. We've got about, Moderna predicts about 20 million doses. Pfizer predicts about 25 million doses through December. But when you look at the population of the United States and the population that we're going to need to have vaccinated, that's really just the tip of the iceberg. We really are going to need to have those ramped up in scale. And also, we're looking forward to the fact that there are other companies that are in development, even though they're not quite so far along. And we're hoping that we're going to be able to get extra doses out of them through the year as well.
So, Amber, here we are at the end of 2020. The first year of COVID is winding down, and What happens now? How do we go from the 45 million doses you mentioned to me or you being able to walk into a corner pharmacy and get vaccinated?
That's a really good question. Obviously, there's no clear answer because we don't know how fast that manufacturing is going to occur. We don't know if there are going to be any speed bumps in distribution, et cetera. But the general consensus is that the average person is going to have it available in the summer. We're trying to make it as available and as convenient for the general population as we can. And so one of the things that they're doing is pharmacies are revving up to give the vaccination in the pharmacy itself. Pharmacists are fully accredited to give vaccines, fully trained, and are a lot easier and more accessible for most people than finding a doctor's appointment. They're hoping that that's going to be the fastest and most accessible way to get people to get the vaccination, and as importantly, to get them to come back to get the second one.
One of the things we have heard about in the news coverage of the vaccine development is this idea that people, for whatever reason, religious or political or just downright fear, may choose not to get vaccinated. Do we need a certain percentage of the population to get vaccinated to actually slow the spread of coronavirus?
Yes, we do. And that's what people are talking about when they talk about herd immunity or herd protection. The idea for that is that we're not just getting immunized for ourselves, we're getting immunized for our community. The more people are immunized, the fewer people there are to spread it. And so if you can get a certain percentage of the population immunized, then there aren't going to be enough people to spread it to keep the disease rates so high. Right now, they're estimating about 65% of the population will need to be immune. Now, you're going to hear really different numbers about that. Sometimes you'll hear 50%, sometimes you'll hear 75%. And really, that's because that number is how many people have to be immune to the virus. So if you live in an area where a lot of people have already gotten it, and a lot of people are already immune, then maybe you need a smaller percent of people to get the vaccination to hit that 65, 70% mark. If you live in an area like Oregon that so far has a smaller percent of the population having caught the virus, then not that many people in Oregon are already immune. So you're going to need more people in Oregon to actually go out and get the vaccination in order to hit that 65, 70% mark.
Do you see there being some significant hurdles when it comes to getting to that number? Do you feel enough people are going to get vaccinated?
I worry about that. Oregon especially has a recent history of a lot of vaccine hesitancy and is one of the states in the country with the lowest vaccine compliance for school children. Adding on another vaccination that is relatively new might scare some people. One of the things that might assure people is that we do already know what the most common vaccine side effects can be. And we know that happens with the flu shot, it happens with a tetanus shot or measles shot. You feel cruddy, you feel bad afterward. That's the idea that it's working. The shot has told your body that something's wrong, tells it that there's an invader that the body has to start fighting. And so when you get that shot and your arm aches and you feel tired, maybe you have a headache, that really means that your body is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It doesn't mean that the shot made you sick in any way. So that's one thing we have to make sure people understand is that if they do feel sick for a couple of days, that's really okay. That hasn't hurt them at all. The other thing that's really struck me about the need for the vaccine and concerns about vaccine hesitancy is that now we're knowing that COVID has much longer effects and more severe effects than we thought it did. It can have effects other than just respiratory effects. So when it first came out, we thought that either someone got hospitalized with respiratory problems or they were fine. Now we know that even people who aren't hospitalized, even people who don't have any respiratory symptoms at all, can actually have the infection go into other organs in their body. So you can have inflammation around the heart, you can have blood clots, you can have kidney and liver damage. And those are people that maybe didn't even show any lung issues. So now that we know that there is going to be a lot of people who have other organ damage And we don't know how long that damage is going to last because we've only been seeing this disease for a year. We don't know how long that's going to last because we haven't been able to follow people up for more than 9 months or so. It could be that getting the disease actually produces lifelong immune or organ damage in the long run.
As we are wrapping up here, Amber, I'd like to thank you again for joining me. And I'd like to end along these lines if I can. Whenever it gets here, it appears quite evident that the development of a vaccine for COVID-19 was quick and efficient. What do you think we've learned about our capacity to develop vaccines in a hurry? And what, if anything, do you see us doing differently the next time a new virus pops up and turns into a pandemic?
We've made, because of this, really significant technological advances in vaccine development. The vaccines that are coming out right now, which they're calling mRNA vaccines or RNA vaccines, are a completely different type of vaccine than what we've had in the past. One of the advantages is we can adapt to diseases that are viruses that are changing much more quickly with this technology. And I wouldn't be surprised if researchers don't go back to some of these diseases they've been having trouble, like HIV, which they've not yet been able to get a traditional vaccine for. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't go back and try to look at those with this new vaccine technology and maybe get a little further along.
Thank you very much. The first doses of Pfizer's vaccine to be shipped to the United States arrived Monday afternoon. On Tuesday, the Centers for Disease Control announced that frontline healthcare workers and assisted living residents will be vaccinated first. Thursday morning, the CDC released a report saying the COVID-19 death toll in the United States could hit 329,000 by December 26th. That will do it for us today. Thank you for listening to the COIN Podcast Network. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this presentation from the COIN Podcast Network. Here's another podcast you might want to check out right now.
There's one story that haunts me.
Ken Martin was 54 years old. And then there was Barbara Martin, who was 48. The oldest was Barbie, followed by Virginia, and then Susan, who was 10.
A father, mother, and three daughters have vanished.
The primary theory at the time was that it was an accident.
Both girls had holes in their skulls.
When we find the car in the Columbia River, we will find the Martin family, and we will solve this case.
To hear more great podcasts, head to coin.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.